This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
Hey, y'all. This is Sam's Aunt Betty. This week on the show, BuzzFeed media and politics reporter Rosie Gray and New York Times national political reporter Matt Flagenheimer. All right, let's start the show.
Hey, y'all, from NPR, I'm Sam Sanders. It's been a minute. Happy weekend to my listeners, to my guests, two New Yorkers this week. So glad to have y'all here. Matt Flagenheimer, reporter at the New York Times covering politics, and Rosie Gray, BuzzFeed reporter covering politics. Thank y'all. First-timers, both of you. Welcome.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
I'm so glad y'all are here. We are going to talk about the news, and this week it's politics and Democrats and some guy named Michael Bloomberg. But before we get there, I do want to ask you or talk with you both about the wackiest story I saw this week. Total wackiest story. Did you see the thing about Bone Thugs and Harmony?
Oh, that they're changing their name or something, right?
Yes. Bone Thugs and Harmony.
What's the new name?
Tell them.
Well, I can't even remember. This, like, went by on Twitter. But it's, like, they're just repeating words in the name, right?
Yeah. They're changing their name. Well, first, just to make sure everyone knows who Bone Thugs and Harmony is, let's hit a bit of their biggest song, Crossroads. This is what, early 90s? Mid-90s?
It's a classic.
Feels like a 93,
it's
94,
a
right?
Yeah. The video where they're all going to heaven and stuff. Anyways, Bone Thugs and Harmony, classic rap group, is changing its name to Boneless Thugs and Harmony because of a partnership with Buffalo Wild Wings to promote Buffalo Wild Wings Boneless Wings. Does that make you sad?
That does make me sad. But
music.
I guess, like, the buried lead here is that Bone Thugs and Harmony is still...
Yeah.
Still thing.
It's like, who knew? Well, also, yeah. It's like, if you see a group as old as Bone Thugs and Harmony trending, your first thought is like, did they die?
Right.
Did somebody die? Turns out it's
got
a nice
scenario.
But, like, they are totally honest about what's going on. They said, a marketing company approached us, and we took the check. And they went all in on it. They actually filmed this short mockumentary about Boneless Wings and the group. It is so weird. We have tape of that as well.
A new love for Boneless Wings led to a new name.
We need to be Boneless Thugs now. Bottom line. I'm not going to lie, but I like Boneless Wings, man. Whatever. It is what it is. Boneless Wings. What?
But not everyone.
It's so sad.
That's depressing.
That's pretty
right?
bleak.
Yeah, everything's just advertising, basically, now. Marketing.
Who is still sacred? Who is still free of all this? Meryl Streep?
Yeah.
I feel like Meryl Streep wouldn't give it all up for, like, a Doritos campaign.
No, I hope not. And if that ever happened, I just don't know what I'd do.
Speaking of all the things money can buy, let's pivot to Michael Bloomberg.
What a transition.
I was very proud of that one. Thank you for noticing. Michael Bloomberg, billionaire, former mayor of New York City, is spending hundreds of millions of dollars to run for president as a Democrat, even though he skipped the first several Democratic contests in Iowa and New Hampshire, and also Saturday's caucus in Nevada. Both of my panelists have covered Bloomberg extensively, so we're going to talk about his rise, his money, what it means for our politics. They both have three words to sum up their week of Bloomberg news. Rosie, you're up first.
So my three words are going to be money isn't everything.
Okay.
And I'm going with that because, like you said, Mike Bloomberg has spent an enormous amount of money so far on
what
his presidency.
What is it now? 400 million?
Oh, he spent over $400 million.
I think it's north of 400.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's really, it's unprecedented for a campaign in
and
this stage.
Accelerating.
Right. So he spent this enormous amount of money and it worked up to a point. Improved his polling numbers. He was able to, like, really raise his visibility in these states that he's going to be competing in on Super Tuesday through this enormous advertising campaign. But we saw the downside of this on the debate stage this week.
Yeah. Let's just stop a second and talk about how not good his performance in that debate was. It seemed like from the start, everyone came out, knives out for Bloomberg, especially Warren, senator from Massachusetts. She probably hit him the hardest. There's some tape of this moment from the debate on MSNBC where the audience literally gasped at what she said.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg. Democrats
like,
are not going
to win. Shots fired.
Shots landed.
Yeah, yeah. Rosie, I mean, like, so you've seen this man spend all this money, and for a while it seemed to be working. But my question is, do debates really change things? We saw for months Joe Biden not do well in debates and still top the polls, right?
Well, I think we don't know yet how much this changed things for Mike Bloomberg. But a lot of people watched that debate. And, his performance was, you know, even his own campaign team was unable to, like, really spin it.
I feel like when the spin is that hour two wasn't that bad, you didn't have a great debate.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so they, you know, they're acknowledging that it was a pretty bad performance. That said, Bloomberg has a big advantage over other candidates who might at some point have a bad debate, which is that he has unlimited money to try to keep defining himself in voters' minds, you know, not dependent on things like debates.
Well, and it seems like the only thing that he can really do quite well right now are the ads. You were on the trail with him, Rosie. He is not the kind of politician who loves to shake the hands and do the long emotional stump speech, right?
That's right. He doesn't do a lot of retail politics. You know, he doesn't do a lot of, like, stopping in coffee shops, shaking people's hands, like, just sort of, like, connecting with people, you know, on a personal level. His events are very lavish. You know, he has catered food. They tend to be pretty large, and they're pretty efficient. You know, he comes in, he does his stump speech, which is a pretty short stump speech for a politician. It's about 15 minutes or less long, and then he shakes a few hands on the way out and leaves.
Yeah, well, and Matt, it seems as if this is the way he's arranged his life. You know, when he was mayor of New York City, he didn't really have too much competition. He gave a lot of money to a lot of folks that might have been mad at him, and it made them not mad at him. Has he ever faced something before that would give him this much to respond to and this much challenge and this much questioning about who he is?
No, I mean, look, when you're a 78-year-old billionaire who has run in three local elections against run-of-the-mill Democratic candidates, you're not used to being told what to do. You're not used to being thrown into situations you're not comfortable in. And I think to Rosie's point, he has not exposed himself very often in this campaign or in the years prior to unscripted interactions for an extended period with voters, with critics, the sort of circuit work that all the other candidates have been doing for almost a year in a lot of cases, over a year in a couple of cases, is not the sort of thing that he's been getting better at, and he wasn't that good to begin with.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders here with two guests, Rosie Gray, reporter at BuzzFeed covering media and politics, and Matt Flakenheimer, reporter for the New York Times covering national politics. Matt, I want to give you a chance to share your three words on Bloomberg as someone who covered him back in the day when he was mayor.
Sure. I think it pivots off of Rosie's to some degree, but it's the sort of Bloomberg industrial complex are the three words. And the question how, to Rosie's point as well, is that he has to see if the sort of campaign of Bloomberg can overpower the person of Bloomberg that we saw on the debate stage. It's this question of whether the Death Star, as Rosie called it in a story recently, of the Bloomberg campaign, the staff, the ad spending, the sort of flood the zone quality that they've tried to project can outweigh the very clear deficits of charisma and the sort of liabilities that we saw exposed on stage on Wednesday night.
Yeah. You know, we played a clip of Warren from this week's debate going after Mike Bloomberg. But we have seen Warren's candidacy, especially after Iowa, get a lot less coverage, even as she is performing better than most others in things like debates. Do we have any idea about what's going on with her team right now and her status?
I do think the Bloomberg inclusion in this last debate has sort of injected the Warren campaign with more energy and vitality in these last several days. Having this sort of perfect billionaire foil to play off of has really played to the strengths of her campaign and the message that she had to begin with. But she's really changed up her approach. Obviously, she was much more willing to confront not just Bloomberg, but Amy Klobuchar, Mayor Pete. So I do think that has been a shift from them, and they certainly feel good about how it's gone so far.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is also really weird to me to look at 2020 compared to 16 and see the gradual demise of the strength of the two-party system. You know, Trump in 16 was the least favored candidate of the, you know, GOP elite. He still swept it. And now Sanders and Bloomberg come not at all from the Democratic Party elite. Like, are we seeing here just the slow demise of the party system as we know it? And does Bloomberg and Sanders and Trump indicate that this process will be changing for good?
I mean, the ascendancy of Sanders and of Bloomberg definitely shows sort of how weak these party establishments have become. Yeah. But the dynamics surrounding Bernie Sanders' status as the frontrunner really reminds me a lot of the dynamics in the 2016 Republican primary, where, you know, it was pretty clear pretty early on that Donald Trump was like the prohibitive frontrunner.
Yeah. But no one wanted to accept that.
Nobody wanted to accept that. And there were all these like desperate scrabbling attempts to like figure out who the non-Trump alternative would be. There was talk of a brokered convention, all that stuff. And we're seeing that now where, you know, Bernie Sanders, you know, pretty clearly the front runner at this point. But the Bloomberg campaign is in some ways a sort of like it's despite Bloomberg himself being not technically part of like the Democratic establishment, mm-hmm. it's this attempt to sort of like not face up to the reality that it's probably going to be Sanders and try to find some sort of like mm-hmm. centrist moderate alternative.
Yeah. It very much feels like Ted Cruz's last gasp. You know, Ted Cruz stayed in that race so long in 16 saying like, oh, I'm your only alternative to Trump. We got to try to get me in. And then that didn't work, you know? Like,
funny you should mention Cruz because that's how Matt and I became happiness. Friends because we covered the Ted Cruz campaign together last time.
Wait, really?
As all great friendships begin in Iowa covering Ted Cruz.
Yeah, exactly.
Were y'all in Indianapolis when he dropped out?
Oh, yeah. We were.
I was there too. Wasn't it the saddest night?
A sad night.
Remember when they announced it? And everyone began to weep.
There was weeping.
Yes, in the old train station.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, there was just weeping for, like, 45 minutes. And then people began to drink again. And then, if you recall, before the night was done, randomly, they all began to sing in unison the national anthem. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I do remember that.
I forgot about that, but yes.
Do you remember 6 days before that when he named Carly Fiorina his running mate?
Yeah.
Cruz Fiorina 2016.
Cruz Arena.
A bold move.
Speaking of weird stuff, before we leave the topic of Bloomberg, I want to talk about how strange and sometimes cringy his advertisements and memes and social media outreach is. You know, there's been a lot of reports on how he's trying to buy youth influence. You know, he's buying ads on Instagram. He's giving influencers money to promote content about him. What has been the weirdest, cringiest Bloomberg content y'all have seen so far? I have a lot of examples.
This wasn't necessarily one of the memes that they tried to make happen, but sort of organically, when he shook the dog's face, he was trying to pet a dog and sort of landed on the side of the dog's mouth and just kind of
shook.
Got to the dog, shook the face.
I will say, weirdest Bloomberg campaign content, the one where his campaign posted his face superimposed into Italian meatballs. That is a thing that happened.
Yes, I remember that. That was very weird. It was because it was during a debate and he wasn't on the stage.
There it is.
Bloomberg
marinara. Okay.
Yeah.
Bloombanera. Oh, my goodness. All right. On that note, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll talk about a potential 2020 campaign issue, guns and gun violence. We speak with a teenager from East Oakland who says she sees gun violence around her all the time, a shooting here, a shooting there, a constant reality. And she told me that none of the candidates for president right now are speaking to that issue for her.
What about safety? You know, what about the people that have to be scared to walk outside every day?
After the break, she'll tell us what she would say to them if she had their ear. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. We'll be right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Chobani Oat. Made to taste just like milk, it's creamy, frothy, and great with coffee and cookies. But without the dairy, because it's not milk, it's almost milk. New Chobani Oat.
Support also comes from The RealReal, the leading reseller of authenticated luxury consignment. Shop luxury clothing, accessories, and fine art at unreal prices. From your favorite designers like Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Cartier, and hundreds more. And The RealReal's team of authenticators from around the globe ensure every item is authenticated daily. Shop in-store, on the app, or at TheRealReal.com and receive 20% off select items with promo code REAL.
Astrology is as old as civilization itself. And today, it's easier to access than ever before thanks to the internet and smartphones.
This week on Throughline, how astrology almost went extinct and made a remarkable comeback.
Throughline from NPR, the podcast where we go back in time
to understand the present.
We are back. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders, joined by two guests, Rosie Gray. She covers media and politics at BuzzFeed, and Matt Flegenheimer, who covers politics for The New York Times. So we've talked about the debate in Vegas this week. What surprised the both of you in terms of what wasn't talked about?
Well, given the setting of Las Vegas, where one of the worst mass shootings in history happened, I was a little bit surprised that none of them were asked about gun violence.
Yeah, it was really strange because, you know, in the aftermath of Parkland, it seemed to be like a mass movement organizing itself among young people in this country to make this an issue that everyone had to pay attention to. And then, if I recall correctly, gun control got one mention towards the end of the debate in Joe Biden's closing remarks. That felt weird. So
striking.
Right? Yeah.
And the fact that it was the first debate for Bloomberg, and that's been a major plank of his philanthropy and a major part of his ad campaign since he's gotten into the race is gun control spending. And it seemed like an area where they would certainly spend some time.
Yeah. Well, he founded what's now the leading nonprofit on this issue, Every Town for Gun Safety, right? That's him. That's his money.
Mm-hmm. That's Bloomberg.
Yeah. Anyway, so on this show, we marked the one-year anniversary of Parkland with the show all about teens who experience gun violence that might not get the same level of coverage. Teens from places where there's low-level gun violence sometimes every day. We spoke with teens in East Oakland, California, who experience gun violence like that. A slow burn, a shooting here, a shooting there. And it's been a year since those conversations, and I wanted to check in with one of them.
This is Ajanae.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. When we talked last year, Ajanae Cooper was a senior at Castlemont High School. She has since graduated. She is now working and also taking classes at Sacramento State University. What are you studying?
Nursing.
You'll always have a job. People will always need a nurse.
Yes.
So Ajanae joined us from Youth Radio in Oakland, and she told me that the danger of living in East Oakland and the constant fear of being shot, it is still there for her.
Living in Oakland is pretty scary. You know, you got to watch your back everywhere you go because you might not be the target, but you might end up just getting hit in the crossfire.
So actually, in that episode we did a year ago, Ajanae, I went back with you to the scene of a gun crime that was literally less than a block away from your high school campus. I want to play it now. This was the exact spot where one of your anti-gun violence counselors you worked with was shot.
This is my favorite person in the world. He got shot. Like I said, nobody knows what we go through until they're walking in our shoes. So,
when you're here now where this shooting went down, what do you feel now on this street, on this block?
I mean, I don't really feel anything. Like we were saying earlier, we get numb.
How does it feel hearing that back?
It feels the same, basically.
You still feel numb, you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's East Oakland. It's not ever going to be peaceful. It's always problems with anybody. Like, it could be so simple, you know, and it could turn into something big and escalate to something that it didn't need to escalate to.
Mm. Yeah. If you had to think back on your 4 years at Castlemont, how many people that you knew were caught up in something gun violence related?
Actually, a few people. I know probably at least five people who had some involvement with gun violence. I know one person that got shot at a party. I know someone who were going to fight someone, but they ended up not fighting them because, you know, they had a gun and, you know, it was a lot of situations where I had to just remove myself because I did not want to be a part of that.
Yeah. When we talked, we ran that episode with you just about a year after the Parkland shooting in Florida. And one of the things we talked about was how shootings like that, you know, a big mass shooting at a relatively affluent high school gets a ton of coverage. But violence like you experienced at Castlemont, you know, a shooting here, a shooting there, more of a slow burn of this violence in a poor place, in a place that's more black and brown, that gets less coverage. In the year since we first talked, do you think that's changed at all?
Definitely not. I do not think that changed at all. It's definitely still the same. Just beginning of 2020, I've lost a couple of friends already. You know, they're really young.
What do you mean
really
you lost a couple of
friends? They passed away? Yeah.
Was it through gun violence?
Yes. Not too long ago, a friend of mine I've known since like middle school, he was shot. It was pretty sad because, you know, you might not expect that person to, you know, just get shot all of a sudden. And that's why I said, like, you really don't know what could happen at any time. So you really have to just keep your guard up because it could be you next, you know?
What do you think would need to change for America to start paying more attention to the kind of regular violence that you see in places like East Oakland?
Well, I think for one, everyone as a community needs to start coming together and speaking up about how they feel and, you know, and I feel like people need to stop being afraid to use their voice because, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, it's no point, you know, they're not going to help us, they're not going to do anything. Well, how do you know that, you know, you haven't tried? I feel like if the community worked together, then I feel like other people would start paying attention more because if they see that, you know, people in our own town are not even worried about what's really going on, of course they're not going to be worried because we're not as worried.
You know, this is an election year, 2020. Do you think the candidates for president are talking about gun violence enough or at all?
Definitely not. I feel like they're more worried about winning the race instead of actually trying to fix things that's actually going on in the country. Like, they stay talking about, like, healthcare and et cetera, money, this. But what about safety? You know, what about the people that have to be scared to walk outside every day or, you know, take their kids to the park or even go to school?
What are you going to be doing this year, this election year, in terms of raising this issue?
Well, I am going to be voting, first off.
Okay.
Because I've been waiting.
Oh, yeah. How old are you now?
I'm 18 now.
It's going to be your first election. Are you excited?
Yes, I am. Because, you know, people be like, hey, your vote doesn't matter. And I'm like, yes, it does. My vote does matter.
Yes, it
like,
does.
Like, I want to believe it does. So.
And you should.
I'm going to vote.
Yeah.
I basically want to teach other people about gun violence and what they can do to prevent something like that from happening. Because when I was at Teens on Target, you know,
this is a group that worked on that issue.
Right, exactly. Okay. So I already know, you know, the definitions of things and, you know, how to explain stuff. So I feel like I just need to educate more people. And if I educate more people, I feel like they're going to want to learn more and try to, you know, tell other people. And
yeah. If you could talk to the candidates for president in terms of making gun violence be a thing that they care about and think about and talk about, what would be the first thing you'd say to them?
There are people like us in Oakland who have to worry about our everyday lives and worry about if, you know, the government is ever going to care or step up to do anything.
What do you think they'd do if they heard you say that to them right now?
I feel like they would have a lot of excuses. You know, they'll be like, oh, we'll try to do this. We're going to, you know, they're going to try to petition for things, but it's like, that's nothing, you know? Like, what are you going to do to prove to me that I'm going to be able to trust you to make things better for us?
Ajahnay, I am so honored to get to talk with you again, and I am so excited for your journey forward. Going to school, voting for the first time this year. I am rooting for you, and I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks again to Ajahnay Cooper. We should note, listeners, as we began taping this conversation this past Tuesday, there was another shooting near Castlemont High School while Ajahnay was in the studio with me. A 17-year-old boy was shot from a stray bullet, most likely. It is really, really interesting to hear that conversation and how much this issue was top of mind for someone like Ajahnay, and then not hear these candidates talk about it. It just seems strange, huh?
I mean, this is something that's, like, really affecting people on a day-to-day basis, and it seems like politicians only really pay attention to it, you know, for 5 minutes after every mass shooting.
Yeah,
I mean, the most interesting sort of political moment in this debate in 2020 was after the El Paso massacre, yeah. When Beto O'Rourke was still a candidate. He did sort of make a pretty hard pivot, which was a not small thing politically in Texas, towards very aggressive gun proposals that immediately sort of drew condemnation from Republicans and certainly some Democrats in the field were trying to distance themselves from any suggestion that they were favoring sort of door-to-door gun confiscation. But
yeah, because he said at one point, hell yeah, I want to take your AK-47.
Hell yeah. He said some other words too, I think, of the four-letter variety. But yeah.
Matt is a New York Timesman, so he can't say those.
I'm not even sure what they are.
All right, it's time for a break. When we come back, my favorite game, Who Said That? BRB.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Best Fiends, the puzzle game with thousands of unique puzzle levels to beat and tons of cute characters to collect. Help these cute and courageous characters through new levels that update monthly and play anytime and anywhere. No internet required. Best Fiends is the 5-star rated puzzle game that engages your brain with fun challenges and an engaging story. Download free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu.
This message comes from the BBC with Where to Be a Woman. Join hosts Saatchi Kaul and Sophia Smith-Gaylor to find out where in the world women can live their best lives. Search for Where to Be a Woman from BBC Podcasts.
I'm Peter Sagal. Sure, you're enjoying this NPR podcast filled with important and useful information, but is it the most important and useful information? Like this.
The museum actually went and made a synthetic version of dinosaur breath.
It's Axe body spray, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Wait, don't tell me, from NPR. Listen now and share with your friends.
Hey, Southern California listeners. I have some very exciting news. We're having a live show on Friday morning, March 27th. We're taping our usual weekly wrap on that Friday morning, but we're going to do it at NPR West Studios in front of a live studio audience. Join me and some special guests, and also hear your voice on the show. Get your tickets now before it's too late. NPRpresents.org. Okay, back to the conversation.
We are back. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, the show where we catch up on the week that was. I'm Sam Sanders, joined by Rosie Gray, reporter at BuzzFeed, covering media and politics, and Matt Flagenheimer, reporter at the New York Times, covering national politics. It's time for a game. My favorite game, Who Said That?
Ooh, him is saying that.
Y'all don't sound too excited.
No, I'm looking forward to this.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. This game is delightful because it's so low stakes. The winner gets nothing. The loser gets nothing. We'll all hug it out at the end. I'll share a quote from the week. 3 quotes. You got to guess who said that or get a keyword. Guess what I'm talking about. I'm no stickler. You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Who studied the most?
Studied the most what?
I know, you can't study for this. It was a trick question.
I get it.
First quote, just tell me what we're talking about. The quote is, they need to make one that smells like their fries. This was a line of merch rolled out this week around a certain fast food
company. McDonald's
company.
Candles.
Yes.
McDonald's candles.
there are McDonald's candles?
Yeah.
Dude, yes.
People are paying money for McDonald's candles in their homes?
Not me. But somebody, maybe? So that tweet actually comes from Twitter user Ali C. Michelle, and she was riffing on these new McDonald's limited edition candles that smell like components of a quarter pounder. McDonald's says in their press release, there's no better smell than 100% fresh beef and a perfect combination of toppings. But the candles are like, one smells like mustard, one smells like ketchup, one smells like the beef patty.
I mean, like, I just don't want my home to smell like a beef patty. Is that so wrong?
I feel like the breakfast smells are more defensible.
I would take a McMuffin candle.
Like a McMuffin and a hash brown smell.
Yeah, like a sort of maple syrupy type smell would be okay, I guess. Yeah.
Is this better or worse than Popeye's line of clothing?
I guess worse, because the candles, I just feel like that's kind of like an aggressive intrusion into your space. Whereas, like, if somebody's wearing a Popeye's t-shirt, it's like, okay, whatever.
The shirt only affects the person wearing it.
Right.
Yeah.
True. All right, Rosa, you got that one.
Yay.
Next quote. I was happy when I saw my dance all over, but I wanted credit for it.
There was a New York Times story. I'm going to screw up all the details of it. There was this teenage girl who went viral. Rosie's going to be up to nothing. I'm in trouble.
You got
this
it.
This is the renegade. This is the viral renegade.
I got no
dance.
Details. So I get credit for saying no details.
Can I give you both half a point?
Yes.
Maybe.
Okay.
All right. So that quote comes from 14-year-old Jalea Harmon. She's been in the news recently because she created months ago the biggest viral dance craze of the moment. It's called The Renegade. Hit the song. Do y'all know it?
Renegade. I do, yes.
Stop it. Do it. Please.
No, I don't know the dance. I know the song.
Okay, I was waiting for the move.
I've seen the dance. I could probably do like an approximation of the dance if I had to, but it would be very... It's like this thing where they're like this, and then there's just like this flippy arm thing.
Oh, so you do know it. Rosie knows it.
That felt like it was it.
Anyways, this dance is all over the young internet, namely TikTok. And these big TikTok influencers are believed to have popularized it. But they got the dance first from Jalea Harmon, who is 14 years old and black. And she got no credit. Your colleague, Matt Taylor Lorenz, wrote a piece about this, a week ago? And now she's getting the credit. These influencers have had her on their TikToks to do the dance. She's going on Ellen this week to do the dance. And, like, she's having a moment. I'm happy for her.
I feel like she's earned the moment.
It was a really interesting case of, you know, like a young black creator having their work basically stolen.
Yeah.
And not given credit for it. But in this like very new media viral way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she had created on this app that I hadn't actually heard of called Dub Smash. And then it sort of like migrated onto TikTok.
Jalea, I hope you get a check. I really hope you get a check.
That's right.
Final quote. Y'all will definitely know this one. It is... You'll Love, Chapter 14. Who said that? Who's putting the book out soon?
John Bolton?
Yes.
Let's go.
Oh, okay.
John Bolton, former national security advisor, has been plugging this book now for how many months has he been teasing this book?
We're on like month three of the John Bolton pre-book tour.
Yeah. So he was a big topic of discussion during the impeachment proceedings because a lot of folks wanted him to testify before Congress about what was in the book. He didn't testify, but he did leak a few details of what might be in there. And that was like before the new year. He's still teasing this thing. He's still plugging this thing. I honestly find it annoying. There's this new trend of like... former DC higher-ups teasing their merch. You know, we saw it with James Comey. We saw Sean Spicer had a book. All these guys, once they leave their jobs, want to make me care about the book they're writing. And it just seems a little, at this point, dare I say, tacky.
Do we think John Bolton gets a Dancing with the Stars invite now?
Oh, my goodness.
Following in the Sean Spicer footsteps?
I'm not going to unsee that.
Glorious Sean Spicer tradition. Yeah. Good for him, I guess.
Yeah. Sean Spicer, get that check. John Bolton, get that check. The theme of this episode is the money talks. Eventually, the money wins. That's it. Speaking of winning, is it a tie?
I think it's a tie.
I think we got 1.5 points each.
I think I got more credit than I deserved on the TikTok thing.
You know, we're nice. That concludes Who Said That. Congrats to both of you. All right, now it's time to end the show as we always do. Every week we ask our listeners to share with us the best things that have happened to them all week. We encourage folks to brag. They always do. Let's hear it.
Hi, Sam. This is Rachel from Houston, Texas. The best part of my week was watching my 4-year-old son play in the snow for the first time. We went to visit grandparents in Idaho, and he loved it.
The best part of my week was that after 40 years of foreign service, I turned in my ID badge to begin the next chapter as a full-time visual artist.
The best part of my week was that I got to be a backstage wardrobe assistant at Tyler Perry's final Madea's farewell tour.
My amazing 17-year-old daughter got into her top choice college.
My first novel was just released.
after having cerebral palsy and not knowing if I'd ever finish a novel.
The best part of my week was on Valentine's Day, having pizza and a bottle of good red wine with my wife after we had closed on the first house that we'd ever bought. That was pretty cool.
Hey, Sam. This is Mark from Washington, D.C. The best part of my week happened on Friday night, just a moment or so after the worst part of my week, which is when I took a fall on a rental scooter and broke my ankle. Anyway, a stranger came rushing up to me right away, and he picked me up and carried me in the night into his home and talked to me and told me it would be okay, while the paramedics came and turned his Vanity Fair into a splint on my foot. It was insane. And then he rode with me to the hospital and waited with me in the ER so I wouldn't be alone. I didn't just have a good Samaritan. I had the best Samaritan. It was a really good week. Thanks for the show.
Thanks for all you do.
Thanks, Sam.
Love the show.
This took me like 10 takes, so I'm glad that one finally worked. Love your show.
Bye.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Wow. Scooters are bad, but people are good. That was really, really sweet. Thanks to all the listeners you heard from there. Mark, Christopher, Derek, Anique, Ricky, Cynthia, and Rachel. Really, really good stuff this week. Also, please send photos of backstage at the final Madea show. I grew up watching Madea when Madea was still a character in stage plays. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Listeners, you can share the best part of your week with me at any point throughout any week. Just record the sound of your voice on your phone and email that voice file to me at samsanders@npr.org. samsanders@npr.org. Thank y'all for being here. Rosie Gray, reporter at BuzzFeed, covering media and politics, and Matt Flagenheimer, reporter at the New York Times, covering national politics. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
So much fun.
Yeah. This week, It's Been a Minute was produced by Brent Bachman, Anjali Sastry, Danny Hensel, and Janae West. Our fearless editor is Kitty Isley. She had help this week from Steve Nelson. Our superhero intern is Hafsa Fatima. And our big boss is NPR's VP of Programming, Anya Grundman. Listeners, till next time, thank you for listening. I'm Sam Sanders. Talk soon.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Charles Schwab with their original podcast, Choiceology. Hosted by Katie Milkman, an award-winning behavioral scientist and author of the best-selling book, How to Change. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind people's decisions. Hear true stories from Nobel laureates, authors, athletes, and more about why people do the things they do. Download the latest episode and subscribe at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Spend time in any American city, and you'll likely encounter someone with untreated psychosis. Lost Patients is a new podcast examining our maze-like system for treating severe mental illness, which loses patients to an endless loop between the streets, jail, and hospitals. Does it have to be this way? For the history, the reality, and hopefully some solutions, listen to Lost Patients from KUOW and the Seattle Times, part of the NPR network.